I was very impulsive and a very polemic and troublemaker teenager. It was a pain in the ass throughout. I don't envy my mom, honestly. We had a very complicated relationship, but I made her life a living hell for good 10 years, even more.
Hey, y'all. I'm Brian Pagan. Welcome to episode 3 of Mindfolk, Human Creativity and Mindful Innovation in a Podcast. My next guest, Chiara Fercesi, and I met at Philips while we were working together on a self-help app for people with depression. Since then, she and her partner have been friends of mine, and I was excited to learn more about her career path, from board games to e-mental health apps to co-founding a design collective and working with the New York Times and Washington Post. In our conversation, Chiara shares with me some of her deepest sources of inspiration, her most important career lessons as a creative professional, and a surprising example of compassionate change. Enjoy. Tell me about your grandma. What was your grandma like?
My grandma was my best friend for a long time. I lived with her for a couple of years when I was a kid. And then I went back living with her during my university time because my parents were living in the suburb, in the black hole of transportation, of public transport of Lombardy. And it would have taken me hours to reach my school, my university. So I lived with her during my, she was my roommate during my university year. Exactly. And well, she was a very important figure in my life. She taught me everything I know about generosity and hospitality. And her house was always open for everyone, no matter the time, no matter the hour. She was insomniac, you know, so it was. And wow. So she was asleep on the couch around 10 o'clock in the evening, but then by 3 o'clock she was fully awake and ready to cook for whoever was showing up. I had friends showing up at 4 in the morning, and she looked at me, okay, give them a pillow and a blanket, or do they want something to eat?
It was
sort of an homeless shelter. So it took a bit of time to adjust to the life together at the very beginning, but then it was wonderful, and I miss that time. That's my favorite memory about her. At the same time, she wasn't completely on board with everything, and she was much more liberal than many other people around. And living with me, so having a contact with young people, having a constant contact with young people, also got her accustomed to many different things that are not exactly grandma's topic, you know, the kind of homosexuality, for instance. She was very open to it. And it didn't come easily. So I talked her into understanding it and in understanding what the world was about. And we discussed a lot about politics, society. I think she proved herself to be more open-minded with me than with my mom. So since she didn't really have the responsibility of raising me directly,
yeah,
she could be a bit more open.
What was that process like for you? Like, was it like that? Was there a clear moment, or did it just, how did it happen?
No, absolutely. It was in bits and pieces. A small thing by small thing in the everyday life, whenever she was coming across new things, unknown things, things for which she had prejudice before, because that's the way it was.
Can you tell me how that worked for, because you, sorry to interrupt, but you just mentioned homosexuality. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me how that whole process for her went?
for her went that they started having the first homosexual friends around. And I started talking with her about them. And at first she was a bit reluctant. And okay, everyone can do whatever, but not exactly right. And then after some time, after she got to meet these people, and she could perfectly relate to them, and she saw that they were just, you know, people like me, like her. Nothing, yeah. Nothing really special and nothing really weird was going on. And so little by little, that's how she got to understand and open up towards that's different things. And but it was never a clear moment, or we had many fights, but never about these things. It was always a discussion. It was always an ongoing talk.
It's nice to have this ongoing discussion to challenge and help articulate our own beliefs. And I know that you're atheist, so I'm curious to ask, what does that actually mean for you?
For me, it means I strongly believe in science. But strongly and strongly. Science, it's the best way, the experimental method, it's the best way that we have to be as sure as we can possibly be about something. And science in itself, it's humble in a way, because scientists, a real and respectable scientist will always tell you we are as sure as we can possibly be, because scientifically the 100% certainty of something, it's never there, because you can always find out something more, you can always find out something better the next day. You never know what the constant research will take you. And That for me is honesty. It's that for me means rationality, and means proving things, not just giving opinions about things and giving fantasies about things and giving hopes. Which, I mean, I really, don't get me wrong, I respect religious people, because if they found a way to calm their doubts, to give an answer to all these questions that I still leave unanswered, because it's a okay. And if they find comfort in thinking about an afterlife, in thinking about a superior being that guides their action, it's totally fine, as long as they do not impose this on anyone else. I do prefer crude and harsh realities over nice lies, over comfortable lies, or over comfortable possible scenarios.
Okay, so how do you apply this rationality to your daily life?
Oh, rationality for me, it's a huge drive. And also, let me think, also in relationships. Both with friends and partners, I tend to rationalize a lot to see, because I had huge crushes for, you know, the asshole of and all these kind of things, but I never went forward. It was a crush. It was a one night stand. It was a one time thing. Never move forward, because I know that some kind of people are just not good for me. And no matter how interesting they can be, how fascinating they can be, it just wouldn't work. So why putting myself in that situation?
Makes sense. Yeah. So, okay. That makes a lot of sense. Given your career path, so you are an artist, you're an illustrator, you're a creative professional. This tends to be thought of as something that's primarily emotional. So how does rationality and this life philosophy play into your career and your work?
I have mixed feelings and I'm very contradictory. And I mean, I can be both things, very emotional and very irrational. These two parts of myself, they coexist. What I meant before is that I never leave my emotions drive my decisions or social opinions the way I vote, for instance. Or it's never a gut feeling. It's always an informed decision. And nevertheless, it doesn't mean that I'm completely feelingless or I'm not an ice block, for sure. I'm actually a very sensitive person, and I use rationality also to shelter myself a little bit, because an overload of emotions, an overload of sensitivity can be overwhelming and hard to bear. So rationality helped me out immensely to put things in the right place and in the right perspective. And that coexists and coexists in my illustrations. Because, for instance, my rationality, you can see it in my process, in my sketches. I never go to final without a sketch, without a very detailed sketch. I know what I want to do, and I have to picture it before. Nevertheless, I find that that's the way I think. So I find out what I want to draw while I'm drawing, and then I finish it. That's a different thing. So my sketch, my process, it's my rational part. And my sketching in itself, it's my more emotional part, because I feel what it's right when I see it. Nevertheless, there's also another rational part in the process, which is the research. I never approach an illustration without researching a little bit on the topic before. So, for instance, I worked for the New York Times and I illustrated a couple of very interesting articles. One on the environmental impact of beauty products. And the article was super interesting, and I went searching for some more. I went visiting all the resources that they were given in the article and took information about it, because that was something I didn't know much before. And I also illustrated, and the last one I did was for the second passport becoming a bit of a status symbol in US, because a lot of people are applying now for a right called jus sanguinis. So if their family was, I don't know, Italian, for instance, there are many Italians in the US. So if your family is Italian, you can apply for an Italian passport, even though you were born in US. That's because family ties, and that's it. And yeah, I went looking for it. What was it? if it's really a trend, and apparently it is, for many different reasons, from healthcare to just a different life. But apparently many Americans are now asking for second passports.
And did your research add anything to that particular illustration?
Absolutely, it added something, because the first ideas I had were a bit more standard and a bit more descriptive rather than conceptual, while the final artwork ended up to have a nice idea behind it.
And which stories did you find to inspire that idea?
Well, the story of this Italian lady that grew up in US, in an Italian family, and she was saying, when I think about cooking, I think about biscotti, not chocolate chip cookies. And she feels this deep bond with Italy, and she would like to live her elderly life over there, because elderly apparently are taking better care of in Italy and in Mediterranean countries rather than in US, and the healthcare costs are lesser. So the final concept was this elderly woman that was knitting an Italian flag from the red thread of the US one.
Wow.
And that inspired me, because I pictured someone in her elderly life, and what would you be doing? What's the image of the Italian grandma? So either she's cooking, she's knitting.
Okay. So just to kind of shift gears a little bit, we talk a lot about awards in design and illustration and art. So how important are awards for you?
How important are they? I lived so far without them. So yeah, you can do it. At the same time, I can't pretend that recognition is not important, because I mean, there is a thrill to it when you see your name on, for instance, on the New York Times, on Scientific American. I was on the cover of the Washington Post.
Wow.
When I received the magazine, I mean, there's a thrill to it. I got people after the cover on the Washington Post. I got my first fan mail. So I got people that wrote me, "We saw your cover. It was super nice. It was the cutest. Many compliments for your art." And that was it. And it was amazing. So how important? I would say not so much. But let me tell you better when I win one, then I can be more honest.
That's a good point. Okay, so we've known each other for a long time, and I know that you've struggled with some very intense insecurity in the past. So if you wouldn't mind, could you just describe for me the process of moving from this insecurity to being featured on New York Times and Washington Post?
It was a super slow process. I had a very erratic career path, because as I wrote in my bio, and you were so kindly checking out for me. At the beginning of my career, I felt like living out of illustration was a dream too big for me, and such a wonderful thing that I wasn't entitled to have it, sort of. And so I settled for, let's take whatever's out there, instead of sitting for a moment and thinking to what kind of illustration career I would have wanted. I just took whatever was out there. And when I tell you whatever, I mean whatever. Oh man, I designed the packaging for the pizza boxes. I designed the No. But worse than that, I designed the cover for the covers, because I designed many over the years, for Harmony novels, which I'm not sure if you know what they are, but they are romance novels, those books that you find in newspaper shops, that all the ladies read on the beach, something like that during summertime. And I designed the line, the medical line of it. So nurses and doctors like there's no tomorrow in all the passionate kisses that you can imagine. My man, I love reading literature. For me, it's very important. Designing that those covers. The lowest point of my career, my self-esteem lower than that couldn't fall. And seriously, worse than that, I was content. We are going down, deep. Worse than that, I was contacted once by the Adventist Church of the whatever day of the seventh day of the miracle. Don't remember anymore. I illustrated 3 children's books for them, not 1. 3. And the first of them, they misspelled my name. On the cover, the first book I ever published, it was for a Christian publisher with my name misspelled on it. Man, seriously, when I tell you that I settled for whatever was out there, I really mean whatever. And so that was the early beginning of my career. Then I worked in board games for 6 years, more or less. And then I decided to move to Amsterdam. And when I moved to Amsterdam, I started finally taking commissions that I was really proud of and that I was really happy with. But it was still a 50-50. So half shitty commissions, half nice jobs. Then something happened. I was feeling, after 2 years in the Netherlands, I was feeling very lonely and very out of touch with the design community, because I was working as a freelancer from home and I didn't have a school, so I didn't have a workplace, so not real chances of contact, of meaningful contact with people. So meaningful and continuative contact with people.
And you were learning English at the time,
and I
right?
was learning English, yes, because my English sucked balls. And yes, I was the stereotypical Italian talking with their hands. So in some way you will understand me. And I spent 6 months of silence. Yes, basically when I came here and I realized that bare minimum of English that I knew back then wasn't nearly enough, I just stayed silent, because you know, it's better shut up and let people think that you're stupid than open your mouth and take away any doubt. So leave it there. I listened for 6 months, meditation and listening, and then after a while I started speaking, and let's say after 1 year and a half in Amsterdam, I was finally comfortable with English, and I applied for a position in an agency, because I felt like a daily job was what I needed. And that's how I ended up in Rotterdam. And that period was very important for me. It was a turning point, because it gave, not having to worry anymore about bread and butter, I had the chance to doing that as a part-time job. And then in my spare time, in the rest of the time, focusing on my personal style of what I really wanted to do as an illustrator, on personal project and promotional projects that were not as remunerative to make a living just out of that, but had very large diffusion and a very large reach. So during those 4 years, I built up a portfolio I could be proud of, and that I could honestly present to publishers without feeling not yet there. And so after 4 years there, I was ready, and I went back to freelancing. And that was a couple of years ago. And since then, things went amazingly well. I took a bit of courage. I went to New York for 1.5 months. I went shaking hands and meeting people I always wanted to meet. And I'm going to make you just one example. And for me, working for the New York Times was my lifetime dream. You know, I never sent them an email. Never. I got to meet them when I was in New York in November. And I never had the courage, the balls, to just write them a cold email saying, I wanted to work for you for my entire life. This is my portfolio. Check it out. Never. Never did that. Luckily, I have a wonderful agent in New York. I work with an agency that represents my work. And so when I told them, guys, I'm coming to New York for 1.5 months, I would like, first of all, to meet you all so that we can catch up. Mm-hmm. And then I would like to meet our directors and people. So my agent, Nancy, came with me. She organized an entire day of meetings from 9:30 to 4:30 in the afternoon. I went meeting the art directors of the New York Times, of the Wall Street Journal. I met 8 people in the Wall Street Journal that day. However, every art director that was available, I talked to. Wow. And then I went to Advertising Age and to American Lawyers Magazine. And after that, every one of them contacted me for a commission. Yeah.
So thinking in terms of advice for other people, that trip to New York worked out because you took initiative and made it happen, right?
Also because you get the work that you show. Meaning, if when my portfolio, for instance, the switch from board games to editorial and advertising, for me was really hard. Because board games have a very specific way of being illustrated, very specific categories of board games, and very specific illustration styles that match these categories. And so when your portfolio is mainly made out of these things, you know that you could do something else, but was watching your portfolio does not. Because, I see this. In case I will need something like this, I will call you. Right. Otherwise, nope. Why should I try asking you to do something different than what I see when I can call someone that does exactly that thing? And it makes perfect sense. So it took me some time to build another portfolio in order to get more commissions. And my agents also helped out immensely in that. And to go back to my English, I think that those 6 months that I spent in silence listening to people helped me immensely from a behavior, from a character point of view. Because I learned finally how to listen properly before saying anything. And that was not with me from the beginning. I was very impulsive and a very polemic and troublemaker teenager. It was a pain in the ass throughout. I don't envy my mom, honestly. We had a very complicated relationship, but I made their life a living hell for good 10 years, even more. So,
thanks for sharing that with me.
Thank you for asking. It was very nice.
Chiara, it was a pleasure speaking with you as always. And everybody else, thank you for going with me on this journey. You want to be on this podcast? Just get in touch on our website, mindfolkpod.com, or via Twitter and Instagram as @mindfolkpod. Let's talk.
Hello, good friend, Brian. This is I, Yost. I'm sitting in my backyard, enjoying the sun, and I just enjoyed your first Mind Snack. I love that name, Mind Snack. So thanks for that.